Strange Radio. Your trusted source for the paranormal, conspiracy theory, and true crime.
Coming to you live from the Mistopheles Studios, it's Dark Fringe Radio.
All I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
You're the disease, and I'm the cure.
That is power.
And welcome everyone to another edition of Dark Fringe Radio. I'm your host, Will Martinez, and thanks everyone for joining us on another adventure here on the podcast, your number one source for the paranormal, conspiracy theory, and true crime. This week we have a very special guest. His name is A.G. Fletcher, and he is an author of a book called The Black Rose Cocoon. And I was actually given a very early advanced copy of the book. Wonderful book. It's a horror, drama, true crime, supernatural, a lot of different aspects, but very well written. We're going to get into all that here in a minute with A.G. Fletcher. But first, want to remind everybody how you can listen to the podcast. Make sure you go to our website, darkfringeradio.com, where you can find all our episodes and stay up to date on everything Dark Fringe Radio. And of course, our social media. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Dark Fringe Radio. And make sure you like, subscribe, and make sure you give us some ratings. That really helps us out a lot, and it really helps us out with the algorithm. So please make sure you go ahead and do that. One other place I'd like to recommend you guys is to our YouTube channel. Please go there and like and subscribe. And of course, you know, give us a rating there as well. Give us some feedback. We'd love it. At Dark Fringe Radio, make sure you go ahead there at YouTube. Also hit the bell notification, so that way when you do that, you are notified anytime a new episode is dropped. So that's it for the social media and the self promotion there. But I'm going to get into our episode here and our interview with author A.G. Fletcher, the author of the book, The Black Rose Cocoon. Yeah. And welcome everybody to another edition of Dark Fringe Radio. I'm your host, Will Martinez, and thank you all so much for joining us on another episode of the podcast, your number one spot for the paranormal, conspiracy theory, and true crime. So we really appreciate it. This week we have a very special guest. His name is A.G. Fletcher, and he's an author of a book called The Black Rose Cocoon. I was fortunate enough to actually get a early copy of this book, and I can tell you, very well written. It's a horror, drama, true crime, supernatural, all mixed in together. We'll talk about all that and much more here in a minute with A.G. Fletcher. But first, I want to remind everybody how you can listen to the podcast. Very simple. Go to darkfringeradio.com. That's where you find all of our episodes, all our archives, all our daily content is right there as well. And so make sure you go ahead and go there and check us out. And of course, our social media, Facebook, Instagram, and X, look up at Dark Fringe Radio and like and subscribe to all our stuff there. We really appreciate it. And one other place I'd love to recommend as well is YouTube. If you could go there, like and subscribe, and also hit the bell notification. So that way, anytime we drop a new episode, you're notified right away. So we really appreciate you guys doing that and helping us out with the social media. And please continue to do so for us because it just helps out the show. So we're going to get into our interview here in a second with A.G. Fletcher, the author of the book, The Black Rose Cocoon. I really hope you guys enjoy this interview. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining on another episode of Dark Fringe Radio. I am your host, of course, Will Martinez, and tonight we have a very special guest. His name is A.G. Fletcher, and he's an author, of a series of Boone and Jacques that he started off with first, And we'll talk about that in a second. But he actually just penned his recent novel that just came out last Friday or two Fridays ago when this will release, The Black Rose Cocoon, which it's an amazing book. I was privy to the book prior to its release. And like I was telling AG, I couldn't put it down. And it was the way it was written very well. But The Black Rose Cocoon is a remarkable story of a very a different array of cast of characters that are all tied together by a very dark and spine-tingling tale. So it's just a great book. Let's welcome to Dark Fringe Radio author A.G. Fletcher. A.G., what's going on? How's it going, man?
Hey, excited to be here. What's going on is I'm actually taking a bit of a break now from writing since this release. Yeah. Because I have a really big project coming soon that I won't be able to really wrap my head around until I've basically been able to relax after I promote the crap out of this book.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a huge undertaking. It's basically the fantasy series I've always wanted to write with a practiced hand. So, yes, I'm very proud of the Boone and Jack series, but that was written basically freehand, meaning... Every installment was me trying a different subgenre of fantasy and trying somehow to link all of the books together so it's somehow cohesive. But because I hadn't really had much practice writing fantasy, which to me, if you really wanted to sing and really stick in people's heads, you have to know what you're doing. Because there's so many fantasy authors out there, and it's really hard to stand out when everyone's basically trying to either replicate what's already popular or try to stand out, but they're not quite there yet. So that's why I was like, you know what? I don't care how Boone and Jack is received. I'm just going to go ahead and give it my all. And then when I'm ready for the actual fantasy series I've always wanted to write, then I'll have not just practice fantasy, but practice writing character. Yeah. Character, especially in fantasy, can really be muddled because it could feel very cookie cutter when you're trying to be how can I say appealing to the masses. And I don't want to do that. I want it to feel like it's organically being received by the masses. Yeah. So that's basically what's going on so far.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, and you do a very good job of that in the Black Rose Cocoon. You do a very good job of separating the characters and they're having their own, you know, issues and tweaks and, you know, things about them that make them unique in their own way and that you don't forget them, which is really cool. But let's get into like the genesis of all this. What got you into like writing, you know, fantasy, horror, you know, crime, you know, what started you in this whole thing?
You know, at first, whenever people would ask me that, it always came down to like the literal answer of what I've been through in life. But when I think about like influences and what really resonated with me as a reader, it came down to two authors, which is obviously for famous series is Harry Potter, so J.K. Rowling. And for horror, it's been basically Stephen King.
Yeah.
I don't plan on reading every single one of his books because, like I say, not every famous author has super books as they pump it out that doesn't exist. Anyone who says that is a nut job or too much of a fanboy.
Love that. Yeah. You're right. But you're absolutely right.
I mean, he has over 60 books. There's no way every single book is like top tier. That's just crazy. Yeah. I mean, if he had actually stuck with taking coke, I don't think that everybody.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you said that because I was thinking just that because I ever saw an interview with him and he was talking about how I think it was Carrie that he wrote half of it while he was on coke and then the other half while he was off of it. Or I don't know if it was Carrie or Cujo, one of the two. I'm not sure.
It's one of the two, but he said the one he was most high was Tommyknockers.
Right, right.
Where he was so coked up that he had to stuff Kleenex in his nose. And I think he did the same for basically the entirety of writing the Dark Tower series.
Right, yeah.
Which I do plan to chip away at eventually. I've only read the first book.
Great series.
Oh yeah. And that's kind of why I stayed away from that because I didn't want to have too much influence for the fantasy series I'm going to write, because the fantasy series I'm going to write is going to be, I don't want to say controversial, but very unorthodox. I was talking about it with my illustrator for Black Rose Cocoon, and who did also did the last books of Boone and Jack, meaning 4 and 5. I said essentially what I'm trying going to do is there's not going to be an actual like institution for magic. I'm essentially going to treat the main characters as lab rats, where in this universe that I'm going to create, there is no light and dark magic. There's actually just one goal for whoever's leading these test labs in a fantasy lore, in a fantasy world where there's, I don't want to call it a prophecy because it's been there, done that, but essentially there's some kind of like, I guess, testament that is supposed to be fulfilled, where there's this bejeweled creature inside of a mountain that whoever reaches it first, that creature will decide what fate the earth has. And so essentially it's kind of like whoever makes connection, spiritually speaking and magically, will forever decide the fate of the earth. And rather than like I did with Boone and Jack, where they're resistant to magic, these two characters who are brother and sister, will be forced into magic, and will by the end of it, use it to their advantage, not to create light magic, but to use that darkness to reset the earth after an apocalyptic event. So, in other words, there is no magical school, and the school that they go to is essentially kind of like a boarding school where everyone's forced to do certain things. I don't know if you've seen this on Netflix. It just came out, I think, last week. It's a real life documentary series called Program.
No, I have not seen it. No.
Okay, so just a quick synopsis.
Please.
Essentially, and it's still going on in the States, which terrifies me, but it starts around this school that basically all white parents brought their children there who they deem troubled and are basically punished every day to like beat the evil out of them, kind of thing. And it's so overcrowded that they're in beds in the halls, and there's not even like possibility of going to the bathroom. You can't, they don't let you leave the building. The second you walk in that door, no one's
You're
allowed
done.
out. So I was getting chilled. I was like, what the fuck? I thought this was like set in the 80s or 90s where white parents were like, oh no, Dungeons and Dragons, everyone's gonna be
Oh
evil.
yeah. I lost a couple friends to that,
And when they were saying
unfortunately.
that it's still going on in like 2023 and then coming into this year, and that it's being replicated by other states and even globally, I was like, what? Is America that nuts? Like they don't trust themselves as parents to be able to discipline their child without literally sending them to hell. So I was like, I want to do something like that, where it's in a magical world where instead of there being right and wrong, there's a blurred line of not knowing what is right and wrong, and the children not knowing what is right and wrong. What do I stand for? What do my parents want for me? What do I want for myself, kind of thing. So, because like in Harry Potter, everything is defined. There's dark versus light, good family versus bad family. I'm like, no, that's just too easy. That's too predictable. It's too, even if you add plot twist, you can kind of see where it's going to go. So to me, it's not about the good guy winning or the bad guy winning. It's more just about the journey that these characters go on and what will come after. Because when that series is done, I don't know how many books I'm going to do, but one of the characters is going to be essentially reincarnated as a human and be joined up with one of the main characters from Boone and Jack in a separate novel called Red Widow Waltz, which is essentially a VR program for adults that have certain abilities. Basically, Hawkins Lab for Stranger Things, but with adults, and set in a kind of like a carny kind of house that's essentially going to be designed in a tarantula's nesting area kind of thing. So
I
it's going
love
to be
that. Yeah, that
a
sounds
long haul,
interesting.
but worth it.
Yeah, I mean, that's all this undertaking. I mean, that's just creating a whole world. I mean, that's so, it's a lot of work to do that. I mean, how do you approach creating such something like that? I mean, I know you're going to take some time off now and kind of promote, Black Rose Cocoon, but how do you kind of like prepare yourself and, put yourself in that space where you're going to start creating this whole world like that? How do you do that?
Well, after I read Stephen King's memoir on writing, and he talked about his approach to writing without meaning to replicate his approach to writing process, I had already kind of done the same thing, but it kind of morphed over time, where for him, he gets an image in his head and it's kind of conclusive, and he tries to make a story out of that. Me, it's more like I just have an image that creates questions out of thin air, and I'm like, I want to know the answer to those questions, and that kind of creates the plot. So, for example, and this is like maybe 4 or 5 years down the road, but I do plan to write a romance novel, which I'm tentatively calling, and it'll probably stick around because I like it, Silver in the Closet, which is a long distance romance relationship where I'm kind of subverting the genre, kind of not on purpose, just it's an idea that intrigues me, where this man, all he has is that picture that I have in my head of this French woman in the Gulf of Mexico, on an island, and just smiling at him or kind of off in the distance. And he tells her, after 2 years of not seeing each other and just communicating through letters and phone calls, that he wants to meet her. But what he doesn't know is that she's not really who she says she is. And that's why she kept telling him, don't see me. That is a bad idea. And so, against her wishes, he goes across the world basically to see her. And even when they do meet each other, it's a matter of, are they safe? Because you always see that in romance novels where, yes, they have this long journey of eventually we're gonna have sex.
It's so
But instead
cliche,
of that, it's more
formulaic.
like, oh, we're together now, great. Are we good to go or no?
Where do we go from here?
That's kind of how it happens for me. And before, it's kind of like me just daydreaming, but I got tired of that because it doesn't feel like. Stephen King always said his ideas would be like in a pasta strainer or something, and or even like for like when you're baking, like a mesh wire, and the good crumbs that stay are the good ideas. So that's kind of how it goes for me. So what I'll do is, if I feel that I have a good idea, I'll stop whatever I'm doing, and either on my phone or on my computer, I'll write like an opening paragraph or something, and ask myself, good idea or meh? And if it's good, it's more like I like the nugget of the idea, but I know I'm gonna start it over and over again. Like with Black Rose Cocoon, I had to restart that so many times because I had no idea what kind of story structure I wanted to do that won't feel one-sided, because I could have done my original idea, which was a character origin story of the killer, and that really turned me off quickly because I'm like, oh, I don't want to focus just on her or even her in the forefront. So I was like, what can I do that won't jar the reader, but will also make them go back and forth to see what happened before? So that's why I decided on a four character rotation, which is really hard to do. And I will never be able to do it again.
Yes, you can. You can do it. You did it already once. You can do
Well, you see, like
it again.
with Red Widow Waltz, it's going to be kind of the same thing, but with two characters, because it'll be more about because the concept I'm going with Red Widow Waltz is how people can weaponize emotion. And I'm going to be using a seedy government to do that. Now, the reason why I say I wouldn't be able to pull off Black Rose Cocoon again is because it is a unique concept that I don't want to replicate again. I want, if I'm going to do something that is structurally similar, it'll be a different structure that focuses on different themes, where this one was more about trying to basically be shaken out of a busy environment where you're too surrounded by noise to think clearly about your emotions. And that's what happens throughout the story, is the noise gets quieter and the danger becomes louder. And danger in a serene setting is what's going to throw these characters off, because they're used to
That's right.
being in the hustle and bustle. So, yeah.
No, interesting. I love that approach. I mean, it's cool that, you could kind of like have adopt somebody else's style, but have your own, twist to it, obviously. You know what I mean? And you coming out with this, the way that you wrote this, like you said, is different. And I love how you just have, like you said, these, certain set of characters that just are a rotation from each act. And you don't really know what's happening in the first like act yet, right? Like you're just getting like the stories. And then around the second act or towards the end of the first act, you start to kind of piece things together. You're like, oh, okay, this goes with this. Okay, I understand. Now, for you to do that, I mean, did that take you like a lot of time to do research? Because the way you did it, because you went from like one genre of of a housewife who has this abusive relationship with this husband and these kids, and then you had go to like almost like a crime drama. You know what I mean? With this lady Rosario. And the things that she's going through, and then this radio host with her sister. You know what I mean? Like, how the hell? I mean, did you do a lot of research for this? I'm sure you had to,
I did a
right?
lot of research for true crime. So this book, in terms of like research and even just like listening to podcast, that was about 1.5 years. So 6 months where I was literally working full time, writing the last book of Boone and Jack. So in which like there was. I couldn't actually like do any writing, but I was like, you know what? This is something I'm only going to be able to do once in terms of like my voluntary need to do it. So I have to get into the obsession of this theme that people seem to love, and that's why Netflix is riding that train so hard.
Oh yeah, they are.
So for 6 months while I'm at my previous day job, where I had a lot of painting to do and it was left to my devices. I would just listen to hours on end of true crime podcast, and shout out to Cafecito and Crime, which is where I drew inspiration for Kelly and Millie.
Oh, that's awesome. Very sassy girls, by the way. I love the way you wrote those characters. Yeah, I
Because
love it.
the girls from I think one of them is called Barb, Cafecito and Crime. They're Spanish, obviously. And the reason why their podcast is called Cafes Doing Crime is because they love coffee. So they're always talking about these like niche coffees and bakeries and stuff, and they like to give fun facts about the city that the murder case is based on, kind of thing. So they're very energetic. So I was like, I want to kind of do that, but subvert it with white girls that think that they're a stereotype that sh shouldn't exist.
Exactly. Yeah, you did a
Some
great job
people
of that.
that I gave a beta test for thought that they were very cringy. I'm like, yeah, but you're only seeing for the first act. That's just them when they're
Yeah, it's a
somewhat
very
normal.
small part of it. Yeah, it's not the whole thing. Yeah, you're
Yeah,
right.
plus what people will notice is that that's their radio personality. When they're off radio, they're kind of mellow. And Millie is more secretive and shameful of herself.
Kind of mean to each other.
Yeah, very sisterly. Anyway, so the way I guess I could now confidently say pulled it off. I don't like boasting myself like that. But anyway, it wasn't really the research that helped me do this. It was more just what sides do I want to cover for the serial killer in terms of how this killer affected the society and families. So yeah, I mean, like I talked to two criminology professors just to understand psychology for female killers and versus male killers. And the female killer interested me more
Oh,
because,
yeah.
I mean, it was kind of a sexist comment, but I understood it. One of the professors, I don't remember where he's from. I know he's from the States. He said that unlike male killers, females will be more opportunistic, meaning they have some kind of reasoning behind their killing. So if they have some kind of, vengeance against a parent or a relative, they'll target that certain demographic to enact their reasoning for their impulse. Where male killers, it's just a body count, and it doesn't matter what childhood trauma they have or don't have. It's just a the thrill of control, basically. Where for a woman, it's more dangerous because they use psychology to get their way, either for financial gain or just pure hatred towards a certain person. But anyway, so the way I tried to pull off four different characters is more like me asking, what do all these crime podcasts and this obsession in streaming services that attract people? So I saw that it was the thrill of the hunt to find the killer. It was the emotional effect on victim family members, how the silent type can be seen as a more powerful witness, I guess. And for the radio host, that was more like me trying to kind of echo how I see the fascination of killers and how people can talk about it so casually as if it's so exciting and so normal that, oh, this person killed a bunch of people. Isn't that cool?
It's so cliche. It's just like, okay, yeah, got it. All right. It's funny that you say that. We've been doing our podcast here. My co-host isn't with us tonight, but he's off on vacation. But it's funny how you do a podcast and certain things do happen, in the show or things like that. And so for me, when you covered, those characters, it kind of hit home for me because I can kind of relate to that. You know what I mean? Because yes, there's a certain part of us that is an on-screen character. You know what I mean? But then there is the other character that's out off, off screen. And my co-host is my best friend. We've been best friends for like 30 years. So I felt that relationship. Throughout this book, you did a great job of kind of like touching on a lot of social, things that are happening in the norm right now, which I found was very refreshing. The language that was spoke, the how it was spoken, the way that you put it out there, was very refreshing for me, which I enjoyed. Did you mean to do that, or was that just something that just came to you and you said, oh, that's just the way I'm writing?
Could you give me an example? Because I kind of forgot how I did that.
Yeah, so for instance, like you touched on like pansexuality, you know what I mean? In the novel, which I thought, who talks about that, right? You know what I mean? And that was, I thought, was a really good, thing that you talked about. And you also like brought in like other social norms. You know what I mean? Like when you were talking about the talk show, and they were talking about certain things about, oh, fat and skinny and stuff like that. So, there's certain things that, women, of course, are dealing with on a daily basis here, even now. You know what I mean? So you did a great job of, bringing all these different things in.
Oh,
Was
okay, I
that
see you.
did you yeah did you mean to do that, or is just that normal, natural to you?
Well, I mean, I think because whenever you watch any kind of true crime documentary that's set in the 80s, there's not really a discussion about that because it wasn't really brought up at that time.
That's true.
It being from the LGBTQ community was like a new thing to media. I mean, I'm straight, and it's not like I'm trying to represent myself because I'm not part of that community. But like I've had friends in the past of that community, and it's also it's not really that. It's more I got tired of reading straight characters and there being no discussion of normalizing sexuality. regardless of how someone identifies themselves. Like, yes, I will always believe that there's only two genders in being a biological human. But you know, who you're attracted to is normal, is nothing. So I brought up those kinds of things not to make a point or be woke. It's more like this should just be considered a normal
Normal.
conversation between people that you don't have to be a part of. So it's not like I made the book about that. It's more like some people will talk about this, and that's okay because it's none of your business. And if you want it to be your business, then be respectful of that conversation if you want to be part of it. If you don't want to be part of it, that's fine. But don't like point the finger saying, "Hey, that's gross." Like, don't, no one cares.
Nobody cares. Exactly. No, and it's I like I said, I thought it was a great way that you just normalized everything, and it was the way you did it. It seemed, normal. It didn't seem forced. It didn't seem like you were doing anything like that. It's just like, okay, this is great. And I love that because like you don't see that in a lot of writing these days. You know what I mean? It's just like it's used the same cliche. It's the same, the way it is. When you were writing this book, did you run into any challenges? Like you said that you had to kind of like you picked it up and put it down, picked it up and put it down. Was that one of the main challenges to stay like focused on the book, or what was the main challenges when it came to it?
I think the main challenge was how do I integrate the killer in all this when I'm not making them the focus? So the way I did that is I kind of made her pop in and out at the beginning until she was necessary to be actually like physically in the room with one of the characters. And even then, I had to make sure I asked myself, how long do I want them in the room for?
You made like a split
Because,
second, right?
because it's a matter of how big of an effect at this point of the story do I need them to have on that character? Because it's less about the murder and more about the psychological effect after the event is over. And that's what's so important to understand about this book. It's not about people dying, it's about the aftermath.
That's
You
right.
know, and how it affects others. Are they gonna go on the run because they can't face that level of emotion and loss, or are they gonna stick around to fight? So I think that was the most challenging, but I think when I went through the revision, I was like, okay, that's fine. So also really the only thing I really changed is I added more detail in the revision. And what I noticed that my editor was trying to encourage me to do, which I've always gotten like better at, but because this was my first not so fantasy based book, the detail that I added at the beginning of like the rough draft was kind of just added after the dialogue or in between. And so she would either erase it or she would just move it down to where the pacing made more sense. So I think that's where I kind of struggled, not because I couldn't do detail. That's always been my focus for writing, but including description in a way that feels natural, when there's not much action going on, that's hard to do when you're not used to using a more realistic setting. So once I looked at the revision and looked at her corrections, that's when I was like, okay, I see what I did wrong there. I mean, it's more fluid in Boone and Jack because I include the cinematography in the visuals of like the environment and stuff. But here I had to focus solely on characters to really tell the story because the city is a city. There's only so many ways that I can paint that. So that's why that yeah, that's what I struggled with a little bit.
Well, no, that's good to know. I mean, the way you did this was such a phenomenal job, and I'm sure you had to have run into some type of roadblocks doing this. But another thing I wanted to ask you, AG, is you putting this book together, that prologue that you wrote, do you think you're gonna do any more like horror series in the future? Because man,
I do plan on doing that, yeah.
that was a fantastic prologue, by the way.
Oh, thank you. yeah, so how can I put this? I was gonna do a prologue again for the new fantasy series, but I expect that in every fantasy series, so I'm just like, I'm cutting that out. I don't want that anymore. But I do plan on doing a similar style of storytelling, if that's what you're asking. So for example, in Red Widow Waltz, that's kind of what I'm going for, but in Halberton City. So the image I had for the when I first had that idea was this character I tentatively nicknamed Harlow is standing in a shower, and you can tell that she's been in there for a long time because she's just not, it's just not her day. And I did something purposeful to kind of create both beauty and sadness at the same time, where in the shower, like right next to her head, is that I don't know if you remember this from the 80s, but you know those old windows that had this sort of like river ripples
Oh
that you can't really see through. So I did that kind of old style window, but I put a monochrome gold tint on it, so that whenever she looks at the Halberton horizon, it that's like her idea of temporary break from her monotony of looking out at the golden horizon. So what I wanted to do with that is create some kind of like French cinema style of storytelling, where it feels like a long wide shot where the character is obligated to tell the story. So between her and the other main character, we're going back and forth of their chronology through their and not just evolution as a person, but their evolution as either a superhero or a supervillain. So it'll be something like that where it's more focused, and that's what I mean by I won't be able to pull off Black Rose Cocoon again, because that was more like me trying to recreate a genre once, where Red Widow Waltz be more about a personal journey for two people. And no matter how many people I involve in this and how many layers I add, it'd be more about their journey, which is what the prologue in Black Rose Cocoon was, which was the little girl's descent into madness. And that also was inspired by when I was watching all of Jeffrey Dahmer's beginnings as a child. So that's it's not something that I could like, if I'm going to do something like that, it's not going to be as simple of, oh, when I was a child, I could decapitate something, and then I did it for real in later life. No, it won't be like that. So,
Yeah, it's
but
got to be
yeah,
deeper.
maybe I'll do something like that one day.
No, I thought it was fantastic that part as well. I mean, that's what started it off for me. I was like, okay, I don't know where this is going. And then you really start getting into each character one by one. When you wrote this book, AG, did you kind of involve some of maybe your personal experiences and with maybe some of these characters? Because some of these characters felt so real to me. You know what I mean? They jumped off the page where I kind of felt in tune with these people, like, okay, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
This was actually the first time that I did my best to separate my own pain in life from the characters, because I did a lot that I did that a lot in Boone and Jack, where I included my mother's passing, even car accidents that I was either involved in or my dad was involved in when I was younger, being close to a loved one and not distant from one. And then I was once involved in a romance scam, so I included that in there. And then I even included what was it that I included? I wasn't lost at sea. Well, there was this one time I went on a family vacation, and we were at the Mediterranean Sea, my sister and I, and we were just treading water in the shallow end, and we didn't notice the water pulling us back further and further, and then the waves got bigger, and before we knew it, we were like three times as far. So, my sister, being the more logical one than me, and she's like, "Don't fight the waves. Wait for it to get to the peak, and then start swimming as it goes down." So we were both panicking, and then by the time we got back to the shore, We were just dizzy because we felt the motion of the wave on us throughout the night. And I think the next day, I think we were at a different beach, and my foot got cut open by a coral that I had slipped on. So I included that kind of stuff. But for Black Rose Cocoon, what I was trying to do is echo other people's pain that I can't really share, because I wanted to basically put myself in a position where I would be able to create characters that don't really have as much of a reflection on me, while instilling not necessarily parts of me, but parts of what I've grown from. So as in, I implicated the lessons that I have learned over time on how to work with your pain as opposed to fighting it. So that's as close as I tried to get myself into that book.
No, that's great. No, I mean, like I said, there was parts of it where it really jumped out at me. So it just felt maybe that you had maybe a personal touch to some of these characters. I mean, because the way you wrote it and the way that you presented it, it was just so well done. So going back to what I was saying earlier, AG, you've done such a fantastic job of putting all these characters together and keeping the killer kind of at bay until the end. I know that was one of the hardest parts for you of writing this book. But you did such a fantastic job of kind of keeping her in the periphery of everything. You also did a great job of bringing other characters that would be kind of like you wouldn't even think they would be an important part of the story. For instance, Paolo, the guy, the bellhop at the hotel. Tell me about that character. Tell me what inspired you about that particular character and how that all worked out for you.
Conceptually, I wanted a quiet character that had a powerful part without saying much. So what was important to me for Paolo is that his connection to the other characters in the killer is more of how can I put it? The fly on the wall that's listening, basically. And eventually starts to speak and buzz around. What was important to me about the character and why I kept him quiet for most of the period is that I wanted to show an imperfect person health-wise that will have pure will to protect the ones he loves. So I'll spoil this a little bit because it's a very short scene, or at least a short action, because it doesn't take much before he disappears for 2 seconds. Is a scene where he's being chased by a mad bear. So he could hear Lunetta, who is Nella's daughter. Nella is the concierge or co-worker at the hotel, and that was actually inspired by a video I saw. For those who don't know, I live in BC, Canada. And there was a video of father and son not being chased but being followed by a bear for I think like a few kilometers. So I want to do something like that. So I was like, this guy, he's not super heavy, but he's also not really athletic because his job is literally to stand all day and open doors. So and he creates miniatures at home as a hobby. So he's not really the most athletic type, but he's also not one to stand around when there's imminent danger. I mean, he does night shifts, so he has to be used to being in danger. So I want to do something like that where I'm like, you know what? He may have a stationary job, but it doesn't mean that he doesn't have the gumph to actually do something if he's protecting someone else. So that's the side of him that I show towards, I think, the midpoint and then onward. So that's why that character was important, because I've seen quiet characters, and yes, towards the end of the book they become more brave and less static, but this character is literally putting his body through hell when he's trying to do athletic things that his body can't handle. And there's even a part that I won't spoil because it's not fun. It's interesting to see how much adrenaline and will that he has in this current health state that he ends up being in, and his way of connecting with people he's never met before.
Right.
So that's the other part of his persona is how does he connect with others when his job is literally to say nothing and open a door. So I want to show that side of him as the danger increases and he has to somehow remain calm and go into action when he's asked for that call to action.
Yeah, you did a fantastic job with that character. I thought that was a very integral character. And you made it very benign at the beginning, where you didn't know where he tied into everything, but you kind of did that with every character, but every character kind of like connected early, and you just didn't see where his turning point was going to be. You did a great job of doing that with him, and I thought that was a really good character into the whole story, which wasn't so cookie cutter, you know what I'm saying? So it was really different than everything else. AJ, you did a fantastic job with this book. It's out now. They can find everything on what, Amazon right now?
Yep, they can run Amazon for Kindle and paperback.
Awesome. And when do you think that next project will be coming on the horizon? I know you're gonna take some time off, but what when do you think that will get started for you on your quest?
I plan to start on my fantasy series in May. So
Nice.
I'm hoping the first book will be out maybe late 2024 or early 2025. Because what I'm going to do, which I've never done before, because I always write just by instinct and have a loose outline to follow. But because this is going to be the last like big series I'm going to write, I'll be spending some time developing the world and the what kind of mapping I'm gonna do, how integral the parts are gonna be, because what I originally thought of doing was starting with a prologue of the two main characters as infants and then being brought to their birth parents. And I was like, oh, it's so predictable. So I was like, nope, we're gonna skip to them being 16 years old and not even knowing how they started their journey. And because I had this image of my head in my head of like, they're up here in their room and they're listening to their parents downstairs talking with these like shady dark people. Because right now I'm reading Half-Blood Prince, Harry Potter.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I love how in the first chapter and even I think the second chapter, we don't even he hear or see Harry's name. And I was like, I want to do something like that, but include the main characters where there's already these complicated political games and agendas that are separate from them, that have nothing to do with them. I want to do something like that where there is something bigger than themselves that's happening already. And that eventually, by the end of the book or the series, we do get pieces of their beginnings and basic reasoning of why they were first separated from their birth parents and then brought back. And is it them being brought back out of love or out of an agenda that's darker than they anticipated. So, something like that. Because, for Harry, it was like he was marked by accident. This is more like they were marked on purpose.
There
So,
was a
something like
purpose
that.
behind it. Yeah. Yeah.
So, that's,
Fantastic premise. Yeah. Great premise. I mean, that's great. I mean, can't wait to, even see what that's going to be looking like and pen to paper when
Yeah.
that comes out.
I did have a title originally, but I didn't like it. It just didn't make any sense. It was called Zofutra, but it sounded like some kind of, I don't mean to be crude, but it sounded like a boner pill for some reason. I don't know why that popped in my head. Like, I take
Yeah.
Zofutra,
Have
lasts
you ever
longer than
taken
Cialis. I don't take
Zofutra?
Cialis. I take
Right.
Zofutra.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good call. Good call on that one. I think that's a good call. Good call. Good call. Yeah. No, that's
Oh,
great.
sorry. Well,
Yeah,
one more
please.
thing. Because you
Please.
were asking about horror novels that I'll be
Yes.
writing. There
Yeah.
is another one that I'll be writing in a while. And I will say the name because it is expected. Jack from Boone and Jack will be one of the main characters for that series or that book. It's going to be called Tar. Literally just the word Tar. Because I was like, you know what? The book It by Stephen King is so popular and it's literally just two letters. I'll add one more for the sake of make it easier on
Letters.
people.
Yeah.
But it's set in a town that I introduce at the end of Boone and Jack's Sahan or Volume 5, called Barlock. It's a very grungy little town, and essentially what happens and why it's called Tar is that whatever was left from the like dark creature in the fantasy series I'm going to be working on, leached through a desert and into the town, and essentially creates another layer of darkness that this rich family that comes from Halberton City goes into town to live a more simple life because that's really complicated. The mom that was in the city with them was actually like a mobster.
Oh, wow, that's
So
a good
like
twist.
she was the evil one. So the dad took them and all the money he had and bought a place, like the most fancy place you could find in a low level city or low level town, but wanted to live a quiet life. But because they don't have any money there, the children are left with the more ghetto people in the town and have to learn how to learn from their street smarts to defeat this evil. And I don't know when I'm going to get to it. I know that I want it to be kind of like a lengthy novel. But yeah, that's another horror novel I eventually plan to write.
Man, you have so many ideas in your head, and I don't even know how, like, you don't, how do you sleep at night? I'm sure you just got all
I
these
don't.
ideas. You don't, right? Yeah, there you go. I figured that. I
I don't
figured
sleep.
it's
Why do you think I have bags under my eyes?
No. I mean, wonderful job, AG. I mean, this book, I implore everybody to go check it out. Pick it up at Amazon.com. Of course, it's the Blood Rose Cocoon. I mean, man, great job, AG. Listen, we're gonna have to have you come back on and talk about your other novels that you're gonna be coming out with. But make sure you pick that up at Amazon.com. And thanks so much, AG, for coming on the podcast and giving us this gift of the Black Rose Cocoon and many other things to come in the future.
Thank you for having me. That was
All
fun.
right. Thanks so much, AG.
All right.
Dark Fringe Radio, your premier source for the paranormal, conspiracy theory, and true crime.